This is episode 114. Today we talk about open source with Chris Seferlis. I am Michael Askins, architect and technologist, and this is IT Pro Tech Talks. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing well. Happy Wednesday. And February too. We got two.
Groundhog Eve, right?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, it's funny, my intelligent office system asked me if I was going to take Groundhog Day off.
Oh,
nope. Didn't know that. I'm not going to take that holiday. Thank you for asking, but no, I'm not going to take that holiday.
Brilliant. Cold opening right into it, man. You know, I tell you, it's hard to believe. I was on a client call like literally minutes before we jumped on here, and we were talking. It's like, we can't believe it's February already. You know, we're a couple weeks are going to be halfway through Q1 of 23. It's just time is flying. Yeah. So, you know, we have, you know, a little bit of a tone here that we've been talking about recently is, you know, what to do about, you know, cost savings or being smart with technology. And one of the things that popped up as an option I hear all the time is open source. And so I wanted to kind of like bracket that in and see, you know, from a Microsoft perspective, what we have from an offerings perspective, but actually, you know this, I know this, but some of our customers might not know this. What is open source, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we need to, let's answer that first. Let's talk about what is open source. And, you know, open source drives a lot of our lives and we don't even know it too, right?
Sure. Yeah. And you know, it's a big topic, right? There are so many different ways of looking at it. And I think traditionally, when we think about open source, we're thinking about more software, right? Open sourcing software, making it available to a community of developers who are enhancing, improving, you know, bug fixes, all that kind of stuff. Yep. But in reality, it's become so much more than just pure, you know, software, right? When you think of things like containerization, Kubernetes for orchestration, all kinds of stuff in the way of infrastructure, virtualization, storage, networking, and really management consoles for working on all that stuff, right? It's definitely gotten a lot bigger than, you know, an open source version of Google Chrome that we're going to fork off and, you know, customize and build our own version of it, right? And so, you know, certainly something to consider when it comes to cost savings. You know, we at Microsoft, we have our own, you know, ways of trying to help customers with their existing investments, right? We are actually compensated on making sure that customers are taking full advantage of their investments that they've made. And, you know, for those of you who have dedicated account teams and reps that you work with from Microsoft, you'll probably hear a lot around do more with less, right? How do we help you take full advantage of the systems that you've already invested in, you know, whether they be first party Microsoft products or, you know, other ways to reimagine how we're doing things?
Yeah, that's beautifully put. And, you know, you touched on a few things that, you know, we interact with on a regular basis. And, you know, I just want to call out, if you ever looked at, you know, some of the settings in your phone, if you're an Android user, I know you're not, but if you're an Android user, there's a list of rights and abilities and packages. And if you really like look at them, a lot of them are built on open source, right? You can get SDKs for that whole world and, you know, make your own fork and you can make your own ports. You can do whatever you really want to do with it. Now, provided that's safe and, you know, it's going to be widely accepted globally and you're going to be the next, you know, Linux, insert your last name instead of Linux, you know, that's a different story. But as the businesses that listen to us, you know, a couple things that come to mind with open source in my mind is like they think immediately, oh, programming. Oh yeah, we got these libraries and these packages that do something and we got to give credit to it in our application so we can use it. But it's much more broader than that. It's like platforms are open source. Right. You know, and I think one of the things are, is like, if we understand what we need and we understand that we can deliver an open source package that's sustainable and scalable for a business, you know, it comes to the question of why should I or why shouldn't I, right? There's advantages and disadvantages. There's pros, there's cons, however you want to make the list out. There are indeed that, right? So, you know, attrition is one of the, or attribution is one of them. You have to give, you know, the tip of the cap, and sometimes, you know, things are fully licensed and open source and free. Some things have components that are. So, you know, that's to understand that, especially if you're developing software on these platforms or using the platform to make your own, I would say that's not necessarily a con or a pro, but it's something that we need to have in mind and consider when we're looking at using an open source platform. So, you know, what components of what we're using and how we need to give, you know, attribution to that. Go ahead.
No. And you know, before we jump into more of the advantages and disadvantages of using open source, you know, one thing to keep in mind along those lines is that, you know, there is a license agreement that you are adhering to, or supposed to adhere to, that you're agreeing to by using that software, right? So, you know, whether it be like an MIT license, you know, that it's been developed at MIT and you have to go by those guidelines, or I'm trying to think of some of the other ones over the course of the year, years.
Yeah, GNU, there's a bunch of them out there.
Yeah. GNU. And so my point of that, though, is that understanding those terms of service will help you determine whether you are technically allowed to even monetize whatever it is you're building on that open source, you know, platform, framework, software, whatever, right? You know, so just something to be mindful of there is, you know, get a good understanding of what those terms of service are if you're planning on, you know, building your own iteration of an open source software for monetization purposes.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, the key to that is have your eyes open. And when in doubt, ask your legal team, even small startups who rely heavily on open source. One of their biggest expenses are with legal teams to make sure that they're products that they're putting out are not going to be ripped out from underneath them because they're violating terms of service or end user license agreements. That's a good call out.
We hear about it plenty, right? You know, in reality, I would be curious to see the number of startups who actually read those licenses and have legal teams, right? You know, the innovators are the ones that break the rules, as they say. You know, so how much of that, you know, is real? I mean, Mr. Jobs used to park in handicapped spaces because why should handicapped people have, you know, priority parking, right? You know, so, and this is documented stuff. I'm not making that up, right? but, you know, and that holds true, though. But, you know, it's certainly something you need to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. And so once you figure out if you can, the next step is should you or shouldn't you?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So. And that's, yeah. And that's a big can of worms to open. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to boil it down relatively simply. We've got a handful of reasons for and against. But again, I think you say it best, you know, consult your professional, make sure that, you know, you are considering all angles of this before you do it. Right. And I think one of the biggest reasons that customers will go, you know, to an open source platform, is because of the cost savings, right? Typically open source software is free. You're downloading it from somewhere. And you know, if you're not having to pay for licenses, that can save you a considerable amount of money. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that it's going to be totally free, because, you know, Microsoft has iterations of various open source softwares that we run and manage for our customers. Right. And we can talk about those a little bit later. But those are, the license is free, but you're still paying for the services. Right. And rather than have a stand up your own hardware and all that type of stuff.
Yeah. And the other thing to consider around that, too, is, you know, a lot of open source, I should say, I'm going to rewind that and rephrase that. Some open source software, specifically Ubuntu, has the ability, you have the ability to get the bits, right? Whichever platform you get the bits. But how they monetize it, like you sit there, you think, how are they making money? Well, if organizations are using this as a platform to be on, they offer that premium tier support. So you're not out there searching and crawling through, you know, Slashdot trying to find, you know, an answer. You're not searching Reddit. You're not on the tech community. You're not on whatever trying to find. You can have that enterprise class support model behind open source. So some organizations have found ways to help monetize it, which actually gets put back into the solution to better it. So you don't have to buy the bits. You can just download Ubuntu server. But if you have an account, like, you know, you're off and you're running. Whereas like Red Hat, if you're going to deploy Red Hat, you're buying the bits and then you're buying the support on top of it. Not saying one's better than the other. You know, I see both a lot, but then there's people that like Red Hat, and way back in the day, they decided to use CentOS because that's very similar to Red Hat and it can function. The libraries, the port is very similar. But if you have CentOS, again, if you're deploying that in your enterprise and you don't have that backing of Red Hat, you don't have that backing of being able to pick up the bat phone when you're having a bad day, technically, something to be said about both sides of this, right? And I'm sure that's going to be in our pros and cons list.
Sure. And we can jump to that, you know, when we start talking about some of the disadvantages for sure. But one of the nice things, you know, as you kind of, you've determined, open source is the way we want to go. We're going to save some money. You know, we can adhere to these legal reasons. It really gives you a lot of flexibility when you have access to that source code, you know, as you put it, the bits, right? Yep. You've got that ability to, you know, customize, modify, and then really integrate that software into their environment as needed. Right. And it really gets driven by the fact that the open source community wants to work with the overall open source community. And, you know, typically open source software is designed to work with other open source tools and technologies. Right. And this allows us to improve the interoperability across those various, you know, tools, platforms, software, whatever they are. Right.
Yep. Absolutely.
And, you know, as you know, that kind of flows into the community aspect of things where, you know, the open source community is a main driver in the innovation behind open source, right? They're spending the time to enhance something, you know, do bug fixes, whatever it happens to be. You know, just a quick aside, right? We were talking to a student who graduated recently and didn't really come across any real good job offers, you know, as he was graduating, you know, data scientist, data analyst type roles he's looking for. You know, and one of the recommendations one of my colleagues made was to contribute to an open source, you know, whatever it be, library, tool, whatever it happens to be. You know, especially in the data science space, a lot of the tooling is open source. A lot of the frameworks, a lot of the languages, you know, and those libraries are all generally open source. And so, you know, a developer can make a name for themselves by contributing to that, right? And if you can prove that you contributed to you know, a GitHub repo that had something to do with a specific technology or algorithm or whatever library, you know, that can be kudos and sort of lead to opportunities down the road as well.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I think is awesome is when you give back, you know, like taking the time to contribute to a project, an open source project, contribute to a library that's going to make a change, contribute to a tool set that makes it available in maybe a development IDE or something like that. When you're giving back, you don't just get recognition for, you know, doing that. You're not going to get attribution just because of that. You're actually making it better for you and those who follow you. So there's a little tug on the heartstrings there for technology, you know?
Yeah. And in fairness, you know, there's a certain satisfaction in a job well done, right? If There's an open issue that you know they've had trouble solving, and you can solve it. You know, it sort of gives you that, you know, the badge of honor, if you will, right? Or the kudos from the community. But it also kind of gives you that internal feel good, right? Yeah. And so, you know, I think as technologists, engineers, architects, that type of thing, there's a certain satisfaction with solving a problem, right? Yeah. And especially if it's a problem that a lot of people have had or have experienced, and you can add to that. So, I think it's great.
Yeah, for sure. You want to light up that pro con list?
You know, on the flip side, right? Let's look at, you know, maybe some of the downsides that not everybody's aware of, or you should at least consider, right? First is that lack of commercial support, right? There's a huge community of users and developers who are supporting these open source softwares. But if you're used to calling Microsoft for support, calling XYZ company for support on software, there really isn't that option if you're using the free version. To your point, you know, many companies have a paid support option as well as sort of long-term support, right, of these software applications. You know, again, another quick aside, we see a lot of products from other big tech companies, other big cloud vendors, where they develop a product, they launch the product, everything looks all cool, and then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we're not going to develop this anymore, and they cut it, right? Sometimes they open source it and make it available. Other times they just cut it all together, you know, and then you're kind of stuck, right? Especially if it just goes away altogether and you're used to using it, there's no transition plan. But when you know, we look at the way that Microsoft supports their software, you know, look, we're still in some flavor supporting Windows Server 2012 and SQL Server 2012, right? You know, I think it's more extended support at this point and whatnot, but there is still support for that. We're still supporting the next iterations of those products, you know, SQL 2014, Windows 2016. You know, these are, you know, a decade old, right? And and you often find that the open source community is not supporting those older versions of software that you're running more than even a couple of years, let alone a decade, right? Yeah. And so, you know, definitely something to consider. If you're putting, you know, your enterprise or your business on a piece of software and it's critical to that software, really, really know what you're getting yourself into from a support perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And just to call out for those who might poke at this and you're not familiar, there's a three-letter acronym that follows one of the models, right? That's LTS. So if you go and download bits that say LTS, that's the port that has what they're referring to as long-term support, right? The other versions and other ports and the other additions that are out there may or may not be as stable and supported moving forward. And they have a versioning cycle that, you know, a 3 year typically that I've seen, that things will drop off and LTS version will move up, and you got that for support for a while. So if you're running your platforms, you know, you should be updating them and making sure all the libraries are current. From a security perspective, you need to make sure all that stuff's done. And from a usability and operations perspective, you want to be on an LTS version. So keep in mind when you're looking that out. Now, that being said, there's been situations where certain applications that I've needed to move to Azure needed to sit on open source or Linux platforms that did not work with the LTS version. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that becomes that, again, that's a con to me, because, you know, if I'm going to go to an enterprise and say, hey, we're going to get you there and you're going to be better off there, but you're going to be on an unsupported version that one is not supported by the application you're using, and two is a custom version that I'm just throwing in Azure that's not supported by Microsoft on that hardware,
right,
you're actually in worse shape. So again, consult your friendly neighborhood consultant who's seen there, been there, done that, just even if it's just for advice, not to necessarily do it for you, but get that advice that on how to approach those situations.
Yeah. And that's actually is a good lead in for the disadvantages, is that it can be very complex working with the different versions of open source software, whether it be LTS or a beta version, or you know, we talked about some of the integrations and the interoperability between different packages, but you know, if you're running a mix where it's not supported, whatever, by Windows, you know, or the hardware that you're using, you know, it can certainly cause some pretty significant challenges, especially if you're not used to that open source world. You know, I definitely have way less experience in the open source world. And so when you start looking at, you know, some of the packages you download and they're unfamiliar file extensions because they're, you know, typically used in Linux and things like that, which I have far less experience with, you know, it can get pretty complex pretty quick. You know, and then you're looking for some kind of guide on how to install it. And if you hit a roadblock, you just don't even know where to go, right? And so, again, it comes down to doing your homework ahead of time, understanding, you know, what you're getting yourself into, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I had a guy who had his first exposure to Linux, and he called my cell phone, and he's all like, I can't figure this out. I got jelly jars in the bins, and I don't know what to do with it. He says, I'm used to DLLs and EXEs. I'm like, okay,
yep.
Dude.
Yep. Yep.
Here we go.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And even just the way that you install software, right? It's just a different approach altogether. And Microsoft has done some of that with PowerShell, where you can, you know, install stuff remotely and just run a command to install it. You know, and that was obviously taken from the Linux world, from the you know, the open source world, where you're pulling these distributions of software. So but yeah, know what you're getting yourself into. And another piece that you mentioned too, is security. You got to keep in mind, open source means that it's open, right? And so everybody can see the source code. And it's great that you've got a whole team of developers that are working on closing those security holes. But then you've got a whole team of folks that are looking to exploit those security holes, right? And they're looking to get into your enterprise systems that run on Linux. You know, so to your point, patching is very, very important. Long-term support is very important. To make sure that those types of areas are being addressed. But, you know, at the same time, if you were to develop some software on an open source platform, and, you know, there are security holes, there are security risks, that can lead to more challenges down the road where you expose yourself as well. So security is a big one. You know, I would say probably the two biggest arguments against would be probably that lack of support if you're used to calling into someplace to get help. And then that security is one of my biggest concerns. You know, again, we've got a whole community of folks that are working on this. But again, you've got a whole team of folks that are looking to exploit it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's bad actors around every corner, and, you know, zero trust aside, you know, just good hygiene, good practices of making sure that you have all the loops closed that you know of, and ones that you can potentially see coming. That's the way to go, right? There's a couple things that I see as a super pro related to how Microsoft's approach has been towards open source. And I'm sure as you mentioned, you're going to touch on some of those areas that are, you know, Azure or Azure native, but let's just talk about Windows Terminal and how we do things, right? So in the day when I used to bounce between, you know, Unix, Linux, and Windows, if I spend any significant amount of time in the Linux world, the second I'm on the front of a command prompt or a PowerShell, I'm doing ls, enter, minus sudo, you know, all the keys, right? And there, it was kind of like Windows is like, wrong neighborhood, bud.
Yeah.
So
find it interesting when PowerShell will also work with the Linux commands as well. Exactly. Like they built some of those in there, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And what takes it to that next level is that if you need to manage multiple platforms, which is where we're at this day and age for medium tier and up organizations, you're monitoring and managing Windows boxes. You're monitoring and managing a whole lot of stuff with Linux and shells. And, you know, even if you are a hardware guy and you're monitoring and managing, you know, network appliances, having Windows Terminal be able to do PowerShell, command line, like you can do a full, you know, I have WSL on my machine, so I'm running Windows subsystem for Linux. So I can just pop a terminal up and I can connect natively to other Linux-y things. Or if I need to do some things WSL checks that box, right? So when I'm looking at architecting solutions to move people's data centers to the cloud or modernize applications, I can, in one set of tool set, just pound out what needs to be done without having to, you know, super scope my machine to, you know, have all these specialty utilities and running PuTTY and all these other tools, TerraTerm or what have you, that connect to the networking devices. Windows 11, or I think you can do it in 10 too, but Windows 11 with Windows subsystem for Linux and the way terminal is and being able to bounce between all of that makes me more productive. And I share that with our client base because a lot of people don't know you can do that.
Right. Right. And, you know, I mean, that speaks to the larger point about what Microsoft has done in developing their solutions that are cross-platform, right? And yeah. So whether it be Linux, Mac OS, or Windows, you know, you think of things like Azure Data Studio, Visual Studio Code, now Visual Studio, you know, and sort of down the line, you know, again, pros and cons. You've got extensions that are open source that are built, right? And you know, some of them are great, some of them are garbage, you know, and it's just, it's totally up to whatever you're doing with it. You know, but having that commitment to multiple platforms just speaks to the recognition of how important it is to be able to support all of those platforms and everybody who's using the tools.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I know Microsoft, there's an actual number to this, but Microsoft has, you know, certain amount of Windows workloads, certain amount of Linux workloads. There's other things that are out there that you can run natively in that Azure platform, you mentioned at the top of our conversation, there's some stuff in that space you wanted to hit on.
Yeah, sure. And you know, before we start talking about specific products and whatnot, you know, really the whole open source movement on Azure and really with Microsoft products in general is based on three foundational principles, right? And it's one, to be collaborative, right, within Microsoft, having that ability to provide the best talent that's out there and retain that talent with the tools that the developers are accustomed to using, right? And so, you know, if we limited ourselves to only Windows developers, you know, we would have a certain faction of people that we would not be able to attract into the world's largest software company and one of the most innovative companies in the world too, right? Having that collaboration is key. Security is huge, right? You know, we've talked about it on this show multiple times in the past, but Microsoft's commitment to security, you know, we used to say 1 billion and 3,500 security professionals. Well, now we're up to 5 billion, 4 or 5 billion a year in dedicated security spending, you know, with, you know, well over that original number of 3,500 security professionals working, you know, whether it be on our red team, blue team, securing products directly, you know, security advisors, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on and on. And really the idea is to help protect you, your data, your business assets, and also be able to keep you productive in the best way possible, right? And that means having secure, reliable software that's not going to crash, that's not going to fail, that's not going to get hacked. And we all have them. We all have the warts. We all have the missteps. We all have the holes that are open. You know, but there is significant effort to make sure that we minimize that. And then finally, that flexibility to be able to operate any of the systems, whether they be on-premises through various ways, hybrid, or even multi-cloud, right? Including all the way down to things like IoT and devices at the edge. And so, you know, breaking it down, we look at sort of three different ways to look at this. I kind of bucketed them like into the data estate, right? Because we've got databases that are open source, that we've got managed offerings around, things like Postgres and MariaDB, MySQL, Cassandra, right? Where, you know, different RDBMSs and NoSQL databases that are available to our customers. And that's just what Microsoft has developed as a first party offering. We're not even going to touch on all of the partners that have all of these different solutions available in, you know, the Azure Marketplace or, you know, as additional offerings, you know, as part of the Azure Cloud. And then, you know, you go beyond traditional databases and having those as managed services. And you look at things like big data solutions like HD Insight, Hadoop, if you will. HD Insight's the Microsoft branded name. We have Spark clusters that are available within Synapse now. You can spin up Spark clusters for doing, you know, machine learning and data transformation and those types of things. And then, you know, Azure Databricks, which is an exclusive partnership with Databricks to allow for better security enhancements, the ability to tap into things like Active Directory natively, and you know, sort of those types of connection options, you know, in an enhanced version of Spark. Ultimately, you know, Databricks is sort of the big data baby these days, right? You know, being able to, you know, do whether it be data science or machine learning, you know, and then other types of operations, you know, related to data. So, you know, just, and that's just, I think the tip of the iceberg of the offerings that we have available, you know, whether they be roll your own, spin it up, you know, and do your own configurations versus a fully managed service where, you know, we take all the guesswork out of it and, you know, we're taking care of the things like the backups and the high availability and the redundancies and all of those types of things on top of, you know, making sure that it's being patched and making sure that we're scanning for vulnerabilities and setting up more advanced features like distributed denial of service prevention, as well as like, you know, being able to ensure uptime and stuff like that, right? So every one of the products has their own SLA, they have their own features, you know, intelligent query processing, enhanced security, all this stuff, right? There's depending on your product, you know, read what's out there, but just tons of data offerings.
Yeah, there's platforms, there's data, you know, Microsoft even has made it easy for those who are running Linux to put SQL on it. You can run SQL on Linux, you know, it's right. It's there. Some things are, you know, first class citizens, right? And that's what's key and clutch, because it's more than just the movement. It's, you know, what businesses are doing. And Microsoft's, you know, it's not that they're allowing it. No, they're fostering it and they're caring and feeding for that environment to continue on within the ecosystem. So as someone that sees mixed environments, I can tell you that's appreciative because it's easy for me, if I'm architecting a solution, to say that you can stand up a MySQL, Postgres over here. We can move you out of your old legacy environment. You'll be supported. You'll be in somewhere that's better than that spinning machine sitting over in the closet in the corner. And it's supported. You know, that's the clutch thing, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned SQL on Linux. I can remember when that was released back in the 2017 version. You know, and there was a lot of questions, you know, when I would sort of be out doing a talk or, you know, working with developers and stuff like that. You know, what is the point of this? You know, well, first of all, it was that portability. It was that flexibility to be able to deploy it to multiple operating systems. But really, you know, I like to think that Microsoft was kind of seeing the future in a way when they were starting to see like the explosion of containers back then, even where, you know, where containers were primarily Linux, not always Linux, but any Windows version of containers seems to be not the best, right? And not fully adopted, I guess.
You know, I've not heard anything from Nano in a long while.
yeah. And you know, I can remember giving a talk more recently, like when 2019 came out, and somebody saying, "Why would I ever want to load SQL on a container?" You know, and now with sort of the advancements in Kubernetes, the amount that we're doing in Kubernetes and everybody's doing in Kubernetes. You know, now we're seeing things like our managed data services and other services running on top of Kubernetes to be able to allow for that scale, whether it be up or down, in or out, that scale to be able to throw as much compute in a very short amount of time at those workloads. You know, and also on the flip side, you know, those very, very small applications that are running on IoT devices in the field, where you can then deploy, you know, an IoT version of SQL Server, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's less than a 500 megabyte footprint that sits on that IoT device. You can do things like machine learning on it. You can do, I believe it supports blockchain now. Our blockchain, I figure we call it Ledger feature in SQL 2022. You know, but it just goes to show that we're giving the flexibility that customers need to be able to support these, you know, sort of next generation or cutting edge capabilities, right? Kubernetes is exploding. You know, we've got Azure Kubernetes Service, and then, you know, we have support for containers through Azure Container Instances. You know, so there's a lot of options around that. You know, and then when we think about looking at sort of new and upcoming things like Dapper, for instance, right? Oh, yeah, where Dapper. You've got this ability to more easily and consistently develop microservices, right? You know, with for your environment, for creating those the building blocks for overcoming the challenges when building like these distributed applications with our microservices. It gives us a framework to be able to use that.
And then just take the security component, right? So when you run an item on a container, all those extra bits for an operating system aren't there. You're only putting the bits that are needed to run the service that's in the container.
Right.
So it makes sense that now you don't have to harden an OS and a SQL database. You just have to, you know, make sure that those services are hardened and any kind of security inside the SQL that you need to have. Right.
Right.
So that's another layer that is just there. Right. And it's brilliant and I love it. And it's, you know, I'm not drinking from the fountain of open source, but I'm saying it's portable. Like containers are here. They're here to stay. They're not going anywhere. They're fast, they're nimble, they're portable, and they have a security component around it. We have an offering at the day job that focuses around Palo Alto having really a first container enabled firewall that mm-hmm. will sit and so it will help protect and broker because of that explosion of the CN series firewall, because of the explosion of the amount of containers that are out there and how we hardening them. We're hardening them, you know, ingress, egress, you know, really what's happening there, you know? So it's just yet another story on it's not going anywhere. It's here to stay.
Right. Yeah. And you think about, you know, software networks, right. Where all that can live on containers and you can do all of the routing that you need to do right through, you know, a software platform and be able to drop that in on a container, then you're just running on any hardware that's supported yep. and you're able to, you know, perform the operations that you're looking to. Right. So,
yep. Heck, network appliances have the ability to run small containerized stuff yep. on the appliance. So,
yep.
you know,
yep.
it's here and it's here. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, I mean that portability, you know, allows for so many features to be added, you know, to a simple network appliance, yep. you know, and sort of it all really became possible because of containers. And, you know, originally before that, because of virtual machines, right? And so, mm-hmm. You know, it certainly changed the world of compute dramatically, and in my opinion, for the better. And then I think the last platform perspective would be around machine learning. You know, so when you think of like Azure machine learning, it allows you to use the open source framework of your choice, right? You can build your models, you can train your models, you can deploy all those models using an open source Python machine learning platform and have all the libraries, well, most of the libraries available to you, right? And then, you know, going beyond that, when you start looking at things like machine learning lifecycle using MLOps, using MLflow, you know, and then you can sort of get rid of things like performance bottlenecks using PyTorch, the PyTorch profiler, and then really just be able to deploy it anywhere using the Onyx runtimes, right? These are all very, very standardized tool sets that data scientists are using to deploy, you know, build, deploy their ML models, you know, and then basically that Onyx project is something that was kind of put together by Microsoft and Facebook, and it's really designed to provide that machine learning framework interoperability to allow sort of more capabilities and, you know, sort of create these hybrid solutions for machine learning.
Yeah, there's a lot in machine learning that across the spectrums, across the vendors, that you see a lot with open source. There's full blown open source platforms to if you provided you have the right kind of hardware that you can run on your laptop, let alone the power if you're going to run a business in something like running on Azure. So, you know, the capabilities are deep. The one thing that I see a lot, or I shouldn't say I see a lot, I get asked a lot is, and this might be a departure from the Azure, was broadly speaking, if we're talking to an organization and they're say a V-level person who's not as technical as say, you know, us, or maybe they're the people that report up to them, and they were to say, tell me two things that I should run in open source on Azure. Mm-hmm. What would those two? I'm putting you on the spot here. I didn't prep you on this one. What would those two things be?
I mean, kind of easy, right? It would be, you know, from an operating system perspective, Linux, right? You can run many flavors of Linux. That's sort of the next piece, you know, that we're going to talk about a little bit, is sort of all the investments that Microsoft's made into the Linux space, you know, and then, depending on, you know, what your objectives are, you know, whether it be running Kubernetes or, you know, for deploying an application and running it in Azure, or, you know, if you want to go more of the data track, right, migrate your Oracle database over to Postgres, right, and no longer pay for those massive Oracle licensing fees, right? Many, like I said, we've got a lot of flavors of databases, and it kind of depends on what your objectives are, you know, but a lot of opportunities and capabilities there. But I mean, those are the first two that kind of come to me off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's the two that I just called up my notes. That's like the two that I had too. So we're kind of aligned there.
Yeah.
The only thing before we move on, I want to also call out, and this is a synapse that just fired in my head, you know, the difference between open source and freeware, right? Because there is a difference, right? You mm-hmm. can buy you can download software and tools to help you that are proprietary. They're not open source, but, you know, by the graciousness of the creator, they're like, here you go. It's, you know, out for the community to use. But then there's true open source and open source projects where, like, the code is available. You have the availability to change that. So, again, I'm taking it up to that V-level person. So there's a difference between, you know, when we talk about running open source versus running a tool or utility or something that's community given to you by a developer. So I know it's a little late. Should have brought that to the top of the hour.
No, but it's a good distinction, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, next area you had is some of the areas in which Microsoft is investing in, you know, applying their not just their finances but human capital too as well in making things better, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, sort of little known fact, greater than 50% of all the VM cores that are in the Azure cloud are Linux. Running Linux, right? And so you think about that, you know, the virtual machines, the cores that are, you know, CPU cores that are running, more than 50% are Linux. Internally at Microsoft, about a third of all of Microsoft's internal cloud usage for all the tools that we use run on Linux, right? And so, you know, this is a company that I don't know, maybe 13, 14 years ago that got up on stage and said, open source is the devil, you know, or whatever the actual phrase was. I'd have to go look it up. But, you know, it was pretty clear that open source was considered an enemy, you know, to a for-profit software company, you know, and just amazing how things have changed, you know, since the Satya took over, coming up on 10 years now, actually. And, you know, and so the sweeping changes that we saw, you know, more than 60% of the Azure marketplace offerings are, you know, image based, and they run Linux, you know, so even more than the amount of Linux that's deployed in Azure, you know, the offerings that our partners are putting out there are, you know, built on Linux, right? Yep. And really, when we look at, you know, the investments that have been made over the past, you know, call it 10 years, and really the range of support offered, you know, from out to the edge IoT devices, you know, and anything on the edge compute, right into things like, you know, Teams and SQL Server and .NET Core, you know, it's really being used across the organization. And then on top of that, you know, we talked about containers, but we look at from an operating system standpoint, you know, special partnerships that we've set up with companies like Red Hat and SUSE Linux. You talked about the WSL being available for, you know, developers on their own machines. You know, just again, this is just the tip of the iceberg, but it has been a tremendous amount of investment made in order to, you know, stand on those pillars again, you know, collaboration, security, and flexibility of those platforms for, you know, our customers and our internal folks.
Yeah, it's good to see the pivot that Microsoft has made over the years. I like to say that it started, I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what I say. I like to say it started with, and again, this is biased because I'm a steely-eyed data center guy. Mm-hmm. Started with System Center. So if you think way back when, where everybody was the enemy and Microsoft had their challenges, then System Center came out, and then everybody's jaw dropped, and they said, "You can manage VMware with System Center. You can manage Macs with System Center. You can do MDM of iThings and Androids." And all of a sudden, like, there's been, and again, Satya, it was definitely a great help in this. There was this big, you know, that whole, yeah, we're going to be good with our partners, you know, and or they're going to our air quote former enemies, which they weren't.
Right.
They weren't. I mean, really, they weren't. How many times did Microsoft bail out Apple? That being said, you know, we're gonna shepherd along, because this is what the community, it was for the better of the community, and that approach is what I like to see. Because if they take it with like operating systems, they take it with opposing operating systems, they take it with whatever device. The messaging once upon a time was any device anywhere, let's get it connected. And then it turned into, well, it's about the service, so let's provide the people what they need. And so I mean, I think my parting note is that investment in open source that Microsoft has, I appreciate. Other tech companies too as well, there's, you know, open source projects all over the place, and so that just further stimulates technology and advancement and innovation. So, you know, hats off to all those out. If you're involved in that stuff out there and you're a listener, you know, hats off to you. Any parting words you might have, or any final thoughts you want to add to the
mixer? Yeah, I mean, just hats off to you folks that can run multiple platforms and multiple operating systems, you know, and have that background. Like I said, you know, anytime I need to do something, even in my, you know, FreeBSD Mac subsystem, I got to go look it up. I don't have the commands remembered and things like that. So hats off to the folks that have the time to be able to focus on that kind of stuff and really have become experts cross-platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, we said this a couple times, and we had a ticker if this makes the video. Again, informational. Everything we said today is to just give you an idea of what's out there. Contact your friendly neighborhood professional to help you with that guidance, should you need it, if you don't have it internally. So please check that out. Also, some housekeeping. Solutions for Networks, as I refer to as the day job, helps make this show possible, being the primary anchor sponsor. So thank you to Solutions for Networks for all that they do. There's lots of information in the show notes. In fact, I have an upcoming show with our UC champ, Chris Bomba. It's going to be the Chris month. February is going to be Chris month. Chris Bomba to discuss some of those topics around UC communications and telephony and what does that mean for teams. So stay close to us, follow us, comment. Again, I say, if we're posting, follow up. We're here to help you. Just shoot us a message. Let us know. On that, again, thank you. We appreciate you as listeners. And Chris, I'm going to schedule you up for another one. You're on the hook, man.
Sounds great, man. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.
Thanks, y'all.